The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
A little bit loud. A little echoey.
I don't think so.
What's a little echoey in my ear? I'll be distracted by myself. Let's see. Is that okay? Can everyone hear okay? Yes, a little bit bouncy here for me. It's bouncy there too. Yeah, so it's not the volume. Maybe it's one of the, I don't know if you know how to do anything else there.
I do, but I'm going
to start the message. So I have to talk. So welcome back. And for our fourth class. And so I think it's nice to begin. If you have any questions from the instructions last week or from the doing the meditation if you did it during the week, or the or any reports. Anyone would like to say how it's been going if you're meditating at home?
So you put a... Is this working? Yeah, great. Okay, so you put a lot of emphasis on being still. I mean, sitting.
Physically still.
Physically still. But I find it easier to meditate when I'm walking.
Yes.
So... what's the disadvantage of doing walking meditation as opposed to...
what's the disadvantage?
Is there a disadvantage?
In our particular meditation tradition, the two primary forms of postures for meditation that we do is sitting meditation and walking meditation. And sometimes in the fifth week, I give a handout about walking meditation. We have one, or it's on our website. And... it's done a little bit differently. The focus, rather than the focus, the primary center of gravity being the breath, the center of gravity is the feet as they walk. In sitting, the rhythm of the breath is the focus of attention. In walking, the rhythm of the feet doing the stepping is it. Some people can't imagine such a pedestrian thing could be spiritual. But in fact, it works very well for developing concentration, developing the mindfulness. And some people find it's very nice because it's more like their normal life, so it bridges it nicer. So it kind of helps them bring more mindfulness to their regular life. And some people do better with the kinesthetic movement. They feel more connected, they're more engaged than they are if they're sitting still. When we teach retreats, meditation retreats for a day long or multiple days, then people alternate between the two. They do 45 minutes of one and 45 minutes of the other. So if you prefer walking, it's fine. It's great.
Is there a speed in which you're supposed to walk?
Is there a speed? Yes, the speed, you start with a speed that brings you a sense of ease. And so what brings you a sense of ease would vary from day to day depending on what's going on for you. And my teacher in Burma, he power walked. You'd have to run to keep up with him. He's like zipping back and forth. Generally, most people that I know walk slower than a normal walking pace. And sometimes people walk really slow. It's because as the mind gets quieter and quieter, some people find it's very nice to get really slow in the walking because it keeps you quite focused and absorbed in the activity. But as it works for you. Maybe at the end of the evening, if you we can look for the handout for you if you want to have it. Yes?
I found that I had a little hard time with... meditating on emotions without recreating in my mind and thinking through what was I feeling again. But what I found is during the day, if I did have an emotion,
yes,
that I could sit with it. But I couldn't do it during my 20 minutes or 25 minutes.
So let me see if I understand. So during the day, you have an emotion. Then you could just sit quiet a little bit and just sit and feel and be with it.
Exactly.
But during the meditation, you didn't have any emotions?
I lost the emotion as I was meditating. It just...
Didn't stay long enough.
It didn't stay, exactly.
Oh, that's nice. It's all good. So if the emotion goes, bye-bye. That's fine. If it stays, hello, welcome. But there's nothing wrong with you that in the meditation the emotion goes away. In fact, one of the reasons why a lot of emotions persist, especially what's called the afflictive emotions, the ouch emotions... the ones that hurt, kind of like, that they persist through time because we're actively fueling them, feeding them. And if you just, in meditation, we just bring a simple awareness to it, we tend not to feed it, and then it tends to pass away relatively quickly. And we feed it by our stories. And so in daily life, maybe you're a little bit more storytelling, so it stayed longer. Could that be?
Stronger
to begin with, yes. Great, thank you. Someone else? Here in the front, Hillary. Is the heater on or the air conditioner? Is that the heater or the air conditioner? Or just a blower? What? Cool. Oh, it's okay. Well, it's just a little. It's okay with people want a little bit of cold air coming in to. Okay. Okay, great.
I found that at the beginning of meditation, kind of checking in with how I was feeling and the emotions I had, and even sort of analyzing them a little bit, breaking them down, trying to see, well, maybe this anger is actually a component, kind of constituent component of fear and jealousy or whatever else there is. It, kind of doing that at the beginning kind of allowed me to focus on the meditation more, like the meditation of the breath or
great.
Whatever I was focusing on during the...
That's really wise.
Sort of just acknowledging at the beginning allowed me to focus on what I want to focus on.
I think that's great. That's very wise. So the idea is if you check in with yourself at the beginning of the sitting and notice what's going on emotionally, your mood or state, then you're you can kind of just acknowledge it and a little bit put it aside so it doesn't kind of unconsciously influence you and pull you into a story, pull you in away from doing the meditation. It's kind of like I see you and maybe we'll pick you up again later, but so that it's a great thing to do. Okay. So today the topic is thinking. I know some of you have been a little bit advanced in your meditation, or already started thinking. So today is talk about thinking and how to let thinking be an object of mindfulness rather than a distraction from meditation. And many people who meditate find that one of the big challenges they have is their thinking, because their thinking keeps pulling them away from their focus on the breath or from the present moment. But it's very important not to make thinking your enemy, to treat the thinking as a problem. But rather, we can turn towards it and use the awareness practice of mindfulness to be aware of thinking while at the same time being free of the thinking, so that we're not caught in its grip, we're not kind of involved or fueled by it. So I'm going to lead you through a couple of different meditations today to give you a sense of how you might be able to be aware, be mindful of thinking that helps you with your meditation. And some of it will be just a basic practice, and some of it will be an exercise to get you more familiar with the territory of thinking, what thinking is like. So, as a little bit more as an introduction, what makes mindfulness as a practice special, or I like to think of it as sacred. In Buddhism, there's very few things which are sacred. It's kind of like a little different than maybe. However, awareness qualifies. Isn't that nice? You don't have to go anywhere. In your pilgrimage, the sacred site, you have it with you. So, but it's the awareness which is an awareness which is inclusive. Oftentimes, awareness is exclusive, meaning that we'll focus on something and consider some things not suitable for attention, or not appropriate, or we don't want to pay attention, we want to get rid of that. And we're only focusing on what we think is important. An awareness which is free, is open, is inclusive, is willing to include within it whatever is happening. And so we focus on breathing, certainly, but we're ready to let go of the breath and include within the experience of awareness the body, what goes on in the body, if that becomes stronger. We let go of the breath in order to take in the emotions. We include that as part of the awareness. And we also can include our thinking within that scope of awareness. And in fact, then we keep opening up, and everything, sounds, sights, everything that goes on in our world can be held in the scope of awareness. When I was practicing, introduced to this practice in Burma, I was doing this practice on a daily basis, and one day I got really happy. And why I got really happy was I suddenly understood, I was doing walking meditation, and I suddenly understood that if I can be mindful of something, I could be free of it. Not like I like free like it's gone, but I could be independent, not caught by it. I could find freedom within that. And I realized that mindfulness can be applied to everything in my experience. No matter what it is, in my experience of being a human being in life, I could be theoretically mindful of. And when I put those two together, I thought, it made me so happy. I said, now I understand that it's possible to be free in any situation I find myself in. It's possible to have a certain kind of independence of a situation where I'm not unduly influenced by it, caught by it, reactive to it. I can just be present, open, and connected, but independent. And I was so happy. So this is the idea of the inclusive awareness. You can include everything. And what that means is that you don't have to change your experience to be free. You just have to see it in a new way. We don't have to try to get rid of certain things or attain certain things. It's not about having a particular experience. It's about how we see the experience we have. So if that was not so understandable, that's okay. It'll come with time. So, to do a meditation. So take a meditation posture. Gently close your eyes. And then begin very simply by checking in with yourself. How are you now? What are the thoughts? What are the feelings? Concerns that you have? That might pull you away from the meditation. And take a moment to acknowledge it, as if it's okay to be this way. And then to begin the meditation, you can take a few long, deep breaths. As you exhale, relaxing into your body, settling in. Taking a deep breath, feeling your body, using that deep breath to feel connection to your body. And the exhale, softening the body. And then letting your body, your breathing, return to normal. Scan through your body to see if there's any obvious places in your body that you can soften or relax. Maybe starting at the forehead and the eyes. softening around the jaw. Softening, relaxing the shoulders. Occasionally it helps to sit up a little bit straighter in the upper back, just a little bit. It actually sometimes makes more space for the shoulders to relax to do that. And it can be helpful to soften the belly. If you were going to listen to a very faint sound far away, you might let your mind get really quiet, still, so you can listen here. Or if you're going to feel some very subtle sensation, you would listen with a quiet mind, feel with a quiet mind. See if you can find some place inside that you associate with being quiet and still. A place of quiet, or a still point, somewhere within. And then with a quiet observation, a quiet attention, become aware of the body breathing. Breathing in and breathing out. Being aware of the rhythm of breathing from that quiet place inside. If you start thinking a lot, see if you can relax the thinking mind, let go of the thoughts, and return to a quiet place inside that can be with the breath in a quiet way. Quiet, easy, one breath at a time. And as you're feeling your breath being with breathing, notice if it's easier to stay with the in-breath or easier to stay with the out-breath, which is clearer in your mind. And then gently, see if you can be more, in a quiet way, be more sensitive to the full cycle of breathing. Perhaps as you exhale, remembering each time you exhale to let go of the thoughts that you have so that you can somehow relax back into the quiet place from which you can quietly be aware of breathing. And then see if you can quietly, from a quiet place inside, instead of focusing on breathing, become aware of the strongest sensation in your body. Seeing if from the quiet place, you can be very simple in relationship to the strong sensation. It doesn't have to be that strong, but the strongest. Allowing it to be there. Feeling it, sensing it. Being present. And then with these few seconds of acknowledging it, then come back to your breathing. And then now become aware of how you're feeling emotionally or mood-wise. It could be very subtle, it could be strong. But from this quiet place of quiet stillness or quiet observation, quietly be aware of how you feel. It's okay to feel however you are. Hold it with a quiet stillness. And then having acknowledged how it may be, how you feel. Come back to your breathing. As you exhale, or letting go of your thoughts, letting go back into whatever quiet place you can find. Still point of knowing, of observing. And then from a still place inside, quiet place, allow yourself to become aware of yourself thinking. And instead of letting go of thoughts, look at them directly. Acknowledge them fully. But do so from that quiet place, still place. Almost maybe as if you're listening to someone else speak or someone else's movie. Without getting involved. Thoughts can be like a train going by. You can just watch the wagons go by. You don't have to get involved. But see if you can be aware of thinking from a quiet place within, still place. If the thoughts fade away, you can go back to your breathing until new thoughts come. Maybe similar to how you would let your mind go quiet so you can feel the music. Let your mind go, some part of your mind go quiet so you can feel or see or sense thinking as it occurs without being involved in the thoughts. Then having acknowledged or seen, being aware of thinking, come back to your breathing again. And from this mindful place within, You're welcome the last minute or so to be mindful, silently aware of whatever arises in breath, body, feelings, thoughts. Let it just very simply be known within that still place. And then to end this meditation, you can take a few deep breaths, feeling your body. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes. So some people think in words, some people think in images, some people do both at different times. Our thinking comes in different strengths. Sometimes if you have really relaxed, you have a nice nap, you wake up under the nice beautiful day and everything's fine, nowhere to go, and you can just feel your thoughts are just kind of floating and light and just kind of wisp-like. Or if you have just robbed the local bank and the police are after you, I bet the thoughts are kind of quite strong and powerful, and you can't just let go of them easily because they're like you're really concerned about something. And so there's a range of very intense and strong, we can glued on our thoughts, and very loud and very, very subtle. If they're very light, not particularly profound or significant, it might be easy just to let go of them. Say bye-bye, just let go and come back to the breathing. And it's a very significant exercise to learn to let go of thoughts, because a lot of our attachments, a lot of our fixations, a lot of our suffering has its genesis in how we hold on to our thoughts, how we glued to them. So if we can start learning to that exercise that muscle of letting go, that will benefit you at a time when you really need it. So you start with where it's easy. So light, easy thought, just let go and come back to the breath. Stay with the breath. Cultivate concentration, steadiness on the breathing. Or if body sensations become strong, on there. Or if emotions, on there. But there's light thoughts you can just let go. But some thoughts are not so light. Some thoughts are quite captivating. Some thoughts have big banners on them that say, this is the most important thing you'll ever think. You better get involved. Better start thinking. This has to be done now. And it's very hard to put them down. An analogy I like for the thoughts, I talked about the train going by, but what I like is you've come down to the riverbank, solid riverbank. You're having a nice day. You're going to rest against the oak tree, looking at the nice river going by. And you feel quite peaceful, quite happy, contented. You've had a nice lunch, picnic. And you're just there watching the river go by. It's very nice. Nothing could be better for the moment. And then you notice, floating down the river, comes this huge riverboat, casino boat, flashing lights, card tables, and shows of all kinds and great food and banquets, and it's just like this, like you can't believe your good luck. And so you swim out and get onto that boat, and you have a great time partying and doing everything, and it takes you for days and days. And, after some days, wait a minute, I was back on the river, on the side of the river, resting under, I was so content and happy. And what am I doing, you know, miles and miles from home? So you get off the boat and you walk back up to your place, and you finally get back to your place under the tree, and you sit down, you're peaceful and happy again. You're watching the river. And then a war boat goes by, and they're fighting, and they're good cause, and it's really important, and so you got to go help. So you get on that, on the war boat, and you're fighting the war. You're not sure who, but you're fighting. And then after some days, you realize, wait a minute, I was back on the river, on the bank of the river. So you get back, you get off the boat, and finally make your way back. And you're happy and content again. And then this really poor, decrepit raft goes down, just like so, the derelict of a raft, you know, just barely. And somehow you got to go there. You get up, and you're on it with other people there. Poor me, it's such a hard life, and I always have bad luck, and it takes you many, many weeks to realize you're on that boat, and then you get off that boat. So our thoughts are like boats that go by, and which boats do you get on? The show boats, the war boats, the poor me boats? What boats do you get on? And what's that getting on, you're getting involved in? So with meditation, what you can learn to do, with mindfulness, you can learn to have more choice about which thoughts, which boats you get on and which you don't. Thinking is a great part of life. It's an important part of life. It's good to get on some of those boats, get involved in some thinking. But the idea is you have choice. And what meditators will inevitably learn, especially people who are new with meditation, is they'll learn how much choice they have, or to say it differently, how little choice they have. You know, you just get pulled into your thoughts. You realize maybe a minute too late, wait a minute, I'm meditating, but I've been thinking. And you sometimes keep getting pulled in and keep pulled out. So the idea is to if the boats go by, just let them go by. Don't get involved. So before I go on with some more, it'd be nice to hear from some of you if you have any, what that was like to do that meditation. What was your experience of the way I guided you? And based on what I hear, it depends how I'll continue here with the instruction. Nothing happened, no whatsoever.
Hello.
Oh, yes, please.
I feel like I was in a shipping channel, quite frankly. I came here with a lot of anxiety. It's really hard to get to that soft spot, the peaceful spot inside. Great analogy with the boats. I mean, seemed like I was jumping from one boat to the next boat, trying to get back to that spot underneath the oak tree. Bit of a battle for me tonight.
So great. And what happened then when I at that point in the meditation where I said, now you're allowed to think, just acknowledge, just see it. What happened to you then?
It was a lot easier to get back to my breathing again.
After doing that.
Yeah.
So in other words, if I understood you, you spent a little few minute or so just acknowledging and being with your thinking. And then it was easier to come back to your breath?
Absolutely. It seemed like an eternity, though. Like, oh, God, what am I doing on this boat?
Great. Thank you.
Thanks for that.
How many of you found that spending a little bit of time, I don't know how long we did it, focusing on just thinking, finally you got a chance, you're allowed to think, and just noticing and being with it, then it was easier to come back to your breathing afterwards? So other people found that? Yeah? So what are some other experiences you had with that meditation?
This is one of the few times when someone asked me to be aware of my thinking where I could actually not be aware. So there wasn't, I mean, I'm sure there was a lot going on, but I couldn't tell.
You couldn't find the thoughts.
But I can sort of get like a little buzz of something, but I feel like I just can't grab onto it. I know it's there, but...
Great. So how many of you found that when you finally had permission to think in meditation and just could look at it thinking directly, it was kind of like, kind of got kind of quiet? Did that happen to some of you? You're laughing.
I feel like I always think, and there was no thought.
No thought. So if sometimes if you're fighting the thoughts or thinking you have to get rid of them, and by coming, you know, let go and come back to the breath, it actually can subtly fuel them and feed them some more. But if you just directly kind of look at it and say, oh, I'm thinking, that's then we're no longer feeding it, we're no longer reacting to it, we're just letting it be. And thoughts sometimes will just kind of fade away quickly. Not always, but it depends on how strong they are, right? Sometimes they're really strong. If you rob the bank, they probably won't. So, yes?
Yeah. I find that if I use prayer...
If you use what?
If I use a prayer...
Yeah.
...that it's very calming.
Very calming, yeah.
And because it's like I'm allowing my thoughts on this track, which I know is not probably not associated with afflictive emotions and the like. So that... And then I find that with the prayer, I can go transition into just being on the breath and then kind of let go.
Great. Yeah, so that's nice. Sometimes that's called kind of an aid. Sometimes we use an aid to get ourselves into the mindful place. And it's very important to know the difference between an aid, a support, versus the mindfulness itself. So there's a variety of things people sometimes use to get them on track, and certainly prayer, mantra, words, sometimes can be used for that. Yes? Let's see where. Oh, yes. You fell asleep. At which point?
Early.
Early. And so do you have any sense why or how come? You're really tired. Okay, that's reasonable. I hope you got good rest. Yeah, up here. Oh, yes, please. Hillary?
I'm realizing I'm sort of at the other end of the spectrum from the gentleman back here. I've been a long-distance runner for a lot of my life and developed a discipline to empty not feel anything, certainly the pain. So that's my default position. I don't let thoughts come in. I'm beginning to think, how can I?
Let thoughts come in. Yeah. Uh-huh. So yeah, so I don't know about this kind of thing, but what concerns me, that seems like a useful skill to have in this kind of extreme sports you have, but it concerns me that it could also be a kind of a resistance or a blocking, a closing down. And that wouldn't be that's not freedom. And what's nice about what happens in meditation, as you get quieter and quieter in meditation, it is not because you don't get quiet because of any resistance or blocking anything out. It's actually the opposite. Everything's included. But everything gets, the inner life gets very, very quiet. Sometimes there's no thoughts at all. But nothing's being blocked, nothing's being held, nothing's being kept out. So it might be a very different place than you're used to. So here, this gentleman here.
Yes, sometimes when I concentrate on my breathing and I relax too much, then it becomes almost oppressive. Like I would want to stop breathing. It would be the ultimate relaxation.
Yes.
But it becomes, of course, impossible to do. So
no, not impossible. When meditation goes, people are really quiet and still, concentrated in meditation, the breath gets subtler and subtler and subtler until there's no discernible breath at all. And some people get frightened the first time it happens. It happened to me. I got frightened. I said, "Oh, I'm going to die." But actually, you can go for a long time with no discernible breath, partly because there's so little metabolic activity needed, because the mind, the brain, is so still and quiet, and everything's quiet. And so, but there's probably enough gases kind of exchange anyway going on, just enough that you need. So it can happen.
But if you feel that it becomes oppressive, then how do you...
The breathing becomes oppressive or not breathing?
Not breathing.
Oh, not breathing. Oh, probably... That, I don't know you, but what I think is that... My guess is that if it feels oppressive, there's probably some way in which you're holding the breath. You're probably getting quiet, but also holding tight somehow. And so you might experiment, see if you can relax parts of the musculature that's connected to breathing and make it easy, and then probably the oppression will go away. That's my guess.
But, excuse me. But can the oppression of that not breathing be just the mentally thinking that you're not? Is that what you mean, that it feels oppressive because you notice that your in-breath hasn't happened? Is that... Or is that something else you're talking about? I mean, is it your thinking? Is it the thinking about your breathing, or is it?
No, it's the, when you relax as much your muscles as possible.
So yeah.
It just feels natural that you should stop breathing because it's an active process to breathe.
So you might see, yes. So if you give up breathing and it feels oppressive to start breathing again, there might be some kind of subtle attitude that's there. See, it usually doesn't happen for people until they've been meditating for a long time, but if you get very quiet as you're staying with the breath, sometimes the breathing is a fascinating thing because it's at the nexus of, at the meeting point of so many different parts of our life. It's almost like the hub of a wheel. And it's, so we have our physical life, and you know our breathing changes as our physical life changes. I mean, for example, if you start running, your breathing changes, right? Or if you get afraid, your breathing changes. Or if you get happy, your breathing changes. Or if you're in love, your breathing changes. And our psychology affects our breathing. Our thinking affects our breathing. Our physical activity affects our breathing. How we react to the world around us affects our breathing. Breathing sits at the nexus of things. And so, and also in a very, very subtle way, certain attitudes that we have about life can be embedded in the breathing itself. And I've known people who have seen that they don't want to exhale when they get really quiet because they don't want to lose something. Or I've known people who don't want to breathe all the way out because breathing out, at the end of the out-breath, it's a loss of control. You're giving up completely. And some people don't want to be in control, don't want to let go all the way. Or some people, I've known people who breathe out all the way, but they don't want to breathe in because they want to be left alone. Leave me alone. I don't want any input, no stimulus or anything. It sounds strange maybe to hear this, but it's only when the mind gets really, really still that you can see somehow with how that subtle attitudes connected to breathing. Places we hold the breath and then don't breathe all the way out. So it could be interesting for you to continue this way and see if there's some kind of subtle attitude that you haven't acknowledged and seen, because it's not necessary to feel oppressed by any of this. Okay, so we'll do one more. Yes?
I find every time I come here and we do the meditation, most of the time, like, I don't know, 5 or 10 minutes into it, it's like, it almost feels like everything from the day is kind of like been locked up, and then I'm doing the meditation and it sort of releases.
Uh-huh.
And it's almost kind of like, I don't know, all the frustration and, you know, all that stuff just sort of like starts to dissipate, and uh-huh. I get into the meditation, like kind of like a release, and it feels kind of sad almost, but
sad
at the same time refreshing and like a relief.
Yes.
Is that normal, or do you know what I mean?
Well, it certainly is to be expected with meditation. It doesn't always happen so in 10 minutes for people. Sometimes it takes longer for something like that to happen. But yes, it's quite common for our daily life to be spinning with thoughts and concerns and emotions and have a backlog and tension in our body that we carry that builds during the day. And sit down to meditate gives a chance for it to unwind and to settle away and to become, have much more sense of peace. And then the thing about the sadness sometimes, you said?
I think it's just, yeah, because most of the time during the day, like I'm just going a million miles,
yeah,
you know, constantly. So I think it's not even sadness so much. It's just like, I don't know, you know, just like, ugh, kind of.
Oh, I see.
Like a relief.
And relief, but also kind of like a little bit, like little bit like, oh, what was I doing?
Yeah, I was just like, oh my gosh, like I'm just.
Gotta do this again tomorrow.
I feel almost like I'm not, you know, not even allowed to let it all go because then I might miss something, but it just feels good to do that. It's a
great,
different feeling.
I think it's really great. So with the relaxing and settling down that you have, you now you're in a position to look back at how you live your daily life in a new way. You have a different perspective, and that's what you're beginning to do. And so I would encourage you to keep going, and then either when you finish meditating, reflect on your life and what you do and these attitudes, like, I can't stop because the world will come to an end. You know, what is your attitude? Why you keep going, and what emotion fuels it, what beliefs fuels it? Is it really true? And doing some deep reflection about this from the perspective of the quiet and calmer place you're in could give you a whole different vantage point to understand your life.
It's a good thing, but very different.
Very different,
thank
yeah. You. Sometimes some people find it's a little bit of a culture shock. It's so different, and some people feel not safe. Some people feel they're safer because it's familiar and to be really busy and hectic and doing a lot of different things, and it doesn't feel safe to do nothing and get really quiet. Sometimes because it's unfamiliar. Sometimes because one reason why some people do a lot and they're really busy is in order so they don't have to feel. And so when they get quiet, then they start feeling what's here. And sometimes there's a backlog of, you know, of sometimes difficult emotions that need to be felt. And it's good to let them come out. Okay. So the topic today is thinking. And as I said, thinking can happen with different intensities, different strengths. If it's relatively mild, then it's fine just to let go. Or if it's really mild and you're not particularly interested in it or caught in it, it's also okay to let thinking just be in the background. And so you're maybe in the foreground of attention, you're with your breathing, and you just, you know, just leave, let the thinking just kind of be in the background. The analogy that was given to me was, like you're walking in a park with a friend and fall with beautiful fall leaves that are falling or something in the background, and you're talking with your friend and you know the leaves are kind of falling off the trees or in the ground, and you kind of know they're there but you're not engaged or looking at them or doing anything with them, so if thoughts just stay in the background and don't interfere, you hardly know you're thinking or you kind of know, but you know you can stay with the breath. Just stay with the breath. If you find yourself losing the breath or distracted from the breath because of your thinking, and there's kind of mild thoughts, it's great to let go. As I said earlier, it's worth saying again, cultivating the muscle of letting go is really useful. If the thoughts don't let go so easily, or if they come back quickly, then it's good to just kind of forget about the breath for a moment, and then fully acknowledge the fact you're thinking. Just turn around, look at your thoughts, look them right in the eye and say, thoughts, I see you. This is what's happening, I'm thinking right now. But not with an attitude to get rid of them or to stop them, just to fully acknowledge this is what, here's a person that's thinking. And sometimes just that full acknowledgement is enough to kind of disconnect enough so we can let them fall away, or we can get back to the breath and continue meditating on the breath. Sometimes thoughts are even much stronger. And they're like the main thing going. At that point, you want to make thinking the object of meditation. And just be very content that now you're going to do mindfulness of thinking for however long you need to. But it's tricky to be mindful of thoughts without thinking even more. So I want to do an exercise with you. So you've been, but you've been sitting for a while. If you want to stand for 30 seconds or so, stretch your legs before we do another meditation, please do. And I'm going to take you on a journey to explore thoughts, thinking in a way probably you've never explored them before. Oh. Close your eyes. And just take a couple of deep breaths, settle in, just to kind of be a little more grounded in your body, in your chair, in the floor. Be here. So, and then without any further ado, allow yourself to think whatever way you want to think, anything you want to think about. Finally, you have permission to think. And become aware, just be very, very simply aware of yourself thinking. If the thoughts stop, that's okay. Just wait for them to begin again. And first, can you notice whether your thoughts are more words or more images? Is there an inner voice which kind of speaks your thoughts? Or is there an inner projector or screen upon which the images appear? And as you're aware of yourself thinking, if you think in words, what's the tone of voice in which those words are being spoken? Like you're listening to someone else speak and you can hear the tone of some tone in their voice. What's your tone? Or if there's images that you see, what's the mood of those images? What's the strength of your thinking? Are you thinking very softly and quietly, barely thinking at all? Or is your thoughts loud and forceful, fast? Is there a lot of energy in thinking? Or hardly any is going in there. Are there any emotions connected or to your thinking? Do your thoughts come out of some emotion or express some emotion or characterized by some emotion? As you think, how interested are you in your thoughts? Are you fascinated by them? Do you invest a lot of importance in them? Are you bored by them? Do they worry you? What's your relationship to your thinking? And if you think in words, is there a location where the loudspeaker or the voice speaks, the loudspeaker that, so is there some location somewhere in your body where that voice does the talking? Or if you think in images, is there some screen or place where those images appear? And as you're aware of yourself thinking, maybe because you're aware of the location you think, or is there any tension or pressure anywhere in your body connected to thinking? It could be very subtle. It could be strong. It could be in the forehead and the eyes, inside the skull and the brain, in the jaws or the neck, shoulders, belly, any tension or holding or pressure. Any location where in your body that seems activated by the thinking you're doing. And then as you exhale, see if you can relax any tension connected to thinking. Almost like there's a thinking muscle. And as you exhale, relax the thinking muscle. Your thoughts have no weight. Your thoughts have no substance, no solidity. Your thoughts are insubstantial. Your thoughts are just thoughts. They come and they go. So now, let go of your thoughts and quietly return to your breathing. And let yourself rest your attention after all that work. Rest with the breathing. Breathing in and breathing out. So if you can continue a little bit longer with your breathing, but if you notice as you start thinking or get involved in thoughts in a very relaxed way, not trying to get rid of thoughts, turn your attention to really notice, to see the fact that you're thinking. Acknowledge that. But now maybe with a fuller sense of what goes on as you think, you can step back, stay on the shore, and just watch the boat go by. No need to get involved in these insubstantial clouds, boats, cloud boats that float by. So then to end this sitting, take a couple of deep breaths. And then when you're ready, you can open your eyes. So to repeat, so in this meditation I'm teaching you, the idea is to have the breathing be the center of gravity. You cultivate your mindfulness and concentration, getting centered on the breath, quiet, calm, calming with the breath. But if something else becomes more compelling than the breathing, so it's difficult to be with the breath, then you can let go of the breathing and let that thing that's more compelling be the thing that you're mindful of. So if it's the body sensations, be mindful of body sensations. You don't have to, no need to fight them or struggle, just learn how to be present and mindful of it. If it's emotions, do the same for there. You can do the same thing with thinking. Thinking doesn't have to be the enemy. It doesn't have to be something you let go of. If it's not easy to let go of, don't worry about it. But you can bring your attention and acknowledge your thinking. And one of the ways to do it is to use the, it's very helpful with thinking, is to use a mental note. Just say, thinking, thinking. Or if it's a particular kind of thought, like you can say planning, planning, planning. Or you can say remembering. Remember something in the past, or fantasy. Sometimes if you're a little more specific than thinking, it's a little bit more fully acknowledged. And also by the mental note is a way of a little bit not being so quickly pulled onto the boat, not so quickly get involved in it. It kind of helps you to step back and just see it for what it is. If the thought is keeps reoccurring, you could, even if you let go of it or it stops and then it comes back right away, or if it just doesn't want to let up, then what's useful to do is to notice two things. One is to notice if there is any physical effect of the thinking on your body. In fact, almost all thinking has some effect on the body or involvement in the body as we think. But sometimes it can be very subtle. You have to be very sensitive to feel it. Sometimes you don't have to be sensitive to feel it. You know, like you're getting a headache. You're thinking so hard. You know, you feel the eyes. Someone says, look at your forehead. Feel it. You realize it's all scrunched up. And that's a physical effect of thinking. All stress, or I shouldn't say all. You're not supposed to say all, right? Most stress is a physical expression or physical manifestation of our relationship to thinking, of how we're thinking. So there we feel, sometimes you feel the stress, you know, that's connected to the thinking. Sometimes you feel the pressure, the tension. And it's really, if you can feel that, the physical corollary, a physical effect of thinking, then it's really helpful, if you can, to relax that. It's easier sometimes you can't really let go of a thought if you don't first let go of the tension that's holding it there. So you can look around, see where is the holding patterns connected to thinking, where's the pressure, tension. So that's one thing, the physical side. But there's also the emotional side. If you're thinking a lot, you can't stop thinking, and there's a very good chance that the fuel for your thinking is an emotion, or the factory that produces the thoughts is an emotion. And you can let go of your thoughts, but as long as the factory is working overtime, you're going to get new ones, you know, over again right away. And some people are confused. I let go of the thought, but right away, it came back. You need to kind of acknowledge the factory or the ground out of which it's sprouting. So, for example, a lot of people who spend a lot of time planning, not everyone, but a lot of people who plan a lot, if they pay attention, they see that under the planning, there's anxiety. And anxiety is the fuel for the planning. For memory, remembering things, could be a range of things. Resentment is a good one. Resentment usually has to do with the past. And so if you're thinking about that person, why she, why he, then you can feel the sense of resentment or anger that might be there. There might be one reason for it. Sometimes having a fantasy or having certain thoughts could be fueled by desire. It's a really strong want. I want something. And so that you could feel that wanting, that leading forward. Some thoughts are fueled by sadness, some by grief, some by doubt. And so if you could, this is why I said earlier in the course that it's a lot easier to be aware of thinking if you know how to be aware of your body and how to be aware of your emotions. And that's where they're really at foundational. So if you're aware of your body, you can start getting more and more sensitive to the tension that's connected to thinking, and you can maybe relax it. If you're aware of your emotions, you can start becoming more better aware of the fuel for some of the thinking that's persistent and strong. And then what's needed is not so much then mindfulness of thinking. What's needed then is mindfulness of the emotion. And so if you know how to be present for emotions, then you can kind of ground yourself there. And probably relatively quickly you find you don't have such a big need to keep thinking anymore. It's kind of like, I like to think of sometimes persistent thoughts as being like this flag. It's waving itself and saying, hey, you, over here. And then you focus on the flag. But what's really calling your attention is waving the flag is the emotion. It's like an arrow pointing back. And that's what needs your attention. Maybe is your emotion, the feelings that are underneath it that are driving them. Is that making some sense? So it'd be nice to hear just a few words from some of you about what that last meditation was like. What was it like to, I know it was a lot maybe, kind of done fast, but what was it like to, I imagine that some of you have never looked that carefully at a thinking. You just took your thoughts for granted. but what was it like for you to explore your thinking with those kinds of questions?
When I was trying to like relax and just focus on the breath and everything like that, I did catch myself like at a state of like where I was aware. I was very aware of where I was, because usually I'm not when I'm thinking. Like I go into fantasy land and think of like other things, but then there was a point where I was like, okay, I'm sitting. I'm trying to meditate. I'm sitting. I know there's people I picture like certain people in the audience. Uh-huh. I'm like, okay, I remember him or I remember her or something like that. And it's like, then I catch myself going back.
Getting lost again, yeah.
Getting lost into thought. And then like, I got to a point where I've lost my, like, I wouldn't say footing, but I lost my equilibrium where I knew where I was at, but I was just like, I lost balance.
You're about to step on the boat.
Yeah, I was going to lean to the side. I was like, wait, and I'd catch myself. I'm like, wait, and then I breathe and I get myself back into thinking to the breath, focusing on
great. That's great. And, and was it satisfying to be more present?
Say it again?
Was it somehow satisfying or for you to be more present than more lost in fantasy?
It was like a mixture. Like I was satisfied because I knew where I was at, but then I got a little bit of anxiety. Like I got the pressure in my head, and I got the like tingling sensation. Then I felt a little uncomfortable, like because I was like, I don't know if I like this. It feels weird. It was very, great. Very strange to me.
Yes, it's a transition. Yeah. It's a transition. Yeah. So you did great. So that was great. I would, if you're interested in this, take it all as a good sign. And it's part of the transition into being more fully present, to have the pressure, a little bit of anxiety, and it'll pass, and you'll discover you can be really peaceful and happy by being present. Probably more peaceful, more happy than you can ever be in fantasy. Thank you. Someone else.
In the first meditation this evening, I was totally distracted and there were lots of thoughts that were just fragments, so I didn't develop any of them. I was trying to return to the breath.
Yeah.
In the second one, I basically took any of those fragments and then tried to develop them into more of a narrative and saw the movie, because I realized I was thinking mainly in images, not words. So when then I was able to indulge in each of those fragments and then extrapolate them into a story, I felt then that I could move on to the next fragment and do the same. And at a certain point, I found it easy to get to the breath because I'd seen the whole movie and didn't really need to deal with it anymore.
It was getting old.
Yeah.
Great.
So then it was a much more effective second half of the meditation where I wasn't really thinking about anything too much.
Nice. Very nice. Thank you. Any of you surprised by what you discover about your thoughts? Up, back up there. Was another mic? Yeah. Then back.
I had something funny happen where usually when I meditate, I, you know, I'm focused on the breath and I keep coming back to the breath when my mind goes off and, you know, I gently bring myself back to the breath. But this, because this was all about mindfulness of thinking, I brought my full awareness to the thinking and the thinking went away. And I was just naturally at my breath so easily.
Beautiful.
I found it kind of humorous. So
it's great.
Like a smile on my face.
Right.
Because I realized once I was embracing that thinking and focusing, like saying the thinking is okay, the thinking went away. I had no thoughts.
Great.
Just with the breath, naturally, rather than having to pull myself back to the breath.
So isn't that nice? So this is a perfect example that if you try to exclusively only stay with the breath and bat away the thoughts, those thoughts are going to make it difficult for you. But if you turn towards them and are mindful of them in this way, I mean, not always, but sometimes, it's a lot easier to put them to rest. Things get quiet, and then it's like almost natural to go back to the breath. Great. How about the tone of voice? Anybody surprised by the tone of voice? Yes? It's coming.
Something?
It should be guru.
It was when you said, think about your tone of voice, that these thoughts that were flickering around in my head, I suddenly understood that there was an emotion that was fueling those thoughts. It was exactly when you said that phrase, What is your tone of voice? And then I embraced the idea of, because I do think in words, probably more than in images. Although I later got the, even before you said it, the image of a muscle, the thinking being like a muscle, and I couldn't figure out what it quite looked like. But that it was a very powerful moment, realizing that it was the emotion that was, because it was a persistent thought, it was something that kept coming back. And it was my tone of voice, the way I was saying
that gave you the clue.
That gave me the clue.
And once you're aware of that, what happened to the thinking?
Oh, it stopped, and it was like a great sense of relief. There was a great sense of relief of, okay, that's
great.
The emotion. You need to just sit with the emotion. It was a real relief to
great.
That happened.
Very nice. Thank you. Anybody else was surprised by the tone or by the emotion that was there connected to thinking?
Yeah, I took the occasion to think about the emotional content of thoughts, and so if you're doing a math problem or a physics problem, there's really not, it just seems like it's purely cerebral. And on the other hand, if you're thinking about a relationship or something like that, there's just a massive amount of emotion. So I kind of picked those two extremes.
Yeah.
And what I noticed was how much the bodily sensations came into the emotional portion.
Uh-huh.
So that
great.
Was...
It's interesting.
And it was kind of scary. It's like you can just get lost in that emotion. And so,
yeah, there's a lot.
And I think, for me personally, that's one of my modalities, is to escape into kind of cerebral.
Because it's safer there for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Very interesting to see that. So this kind of mindfulness practice hopefully makes it safe to also open up to your emotions. You find a wise way to be with them. So it's okay to feel them, but not get swept away or caught by them. So I think it can be very helpful for you that way. So, there's a lot behind thinking. There's a lot of the interest we have, the authority we give our thoughts. Some people have to believe everything they think. If I think it, therefore it must be true. Some people associate their thinking with who they are. The thoughts are themselves. And so if I stop thinking, then who am I? And some people are actually a little bit frightened by it. It takes a while to kind of relax and to realize that you're still great. You're wonderful, even if you are not telling yourself thoughts to reassure yourself you're okay. With this kind of emphasis on mindfulness of thinking, you're allowed to think anything at all, as long as you're mindful of it. So you don't have to judge your thoughts, good or bad, or it's just a matter of just being aware of it. And all this guided thing I did about feeling it in the body, feeling it, the emotion, the tone of voice, the energy, the interest, all those things, that's part of the rich terrain of thinking. And as you're aware of the range of things going on with thinking, hopefully it's a little bit easier to not get swept up and pulled into it, not to invest so much importance in it, not to feel like you have to think. It's important to think. But to just be very simple, very relaxed, and notice your thinking. And it's possible to do that for a long time if you just rob that bank. Just, feel that. And probably then you'll feel the emotions too. And the regret. I hope. So, if what we talked about today seemed too complicated, or now you find yourself thinking about thinking whenever you're meditating and trying, what did he say? What am I supposed to do? This mindfulness is supposed to be really simple. So you can make it simple for yourself by just going back to the breath. When in doubt, go to the breath. You don't have to be engineering or figuring out complicated stuff. Just go back to the breath and then wait until it just seems obvious that you should notice your thinking and be mindful of it. And then if it's obvious, then do it very simply and kind of trust maybe some of what I talked about is there in the background. And you can just note thinking. Maybe say thinking, remembering, planning. And if it keeps persisting, maybe check out and see what's happening in your body, what's happening in your emotion with it. And then if it starts getting too complicated, come back to the breath. The breath is like the default. Just go back. Keep it simple. Make some sense? So it's a fascinating world to be in. All this stuff, the body, the emotions, and the thoughts, and the breathing, all those things, it's a really rich ecology. The world becomes, your inner life becomes three-dimensional, four-dimensional. It's rich when you have all these things and watch and see how they morph and change and affect each other. And it allows you, most importantly, to begin becoming wise of what's going on in there and beginning to find a way to learn to be at peace with yourself. And that's kind of one of the goals of mindfulness meditation, learn how to be deeply at peace with yourself and content to just be here, be present, without being pulled left and right, up and down, round and round on all these boats that come by. So next week, we will kind of do the concluding week for this class, and we'll talk about some of the ways that mindfulness is applicable to our daily life outside of meditation, and also how mindfulness can lead to wisdom and understanding and to freedom and different aspects of it. So that's for next week. And there is a handout here. Now, so next week is our last week. The following week after that, we have a program that kind of piggybacks on this one at IMC. It's called the Beginner's Practice Group. And we kind of designed it so some of you might want to continue, because some people find that it's a lot easier to keep meditating after this course if there's ongoing support. And some of the most senior students, maybe some of the ones that you've been talking to, I don't know who's coming to do it, but will be here for 4 weeks, I think, 3 or 4 weeks after this end of this course, in order to do a little bit more teaching, a little bit more guided meditation, but a lot of chance to have some discussion and questions about how it's going, and so you have some support ongoing. So that's Wednesdays after this is over. And so there's a handout, and also we have these people on the training program who are available to talk to you. Maybe it's good for them to stand again. Can you stand again so people can see who you are? And so when we finish now, if you want to talk to someone, questions about your practice or what in the world was I talking about, You can talk to them and also talk to me. So thank you for this evening and happy meditating.